Hello everyone and welcome to the PlayStation Access Podcast. With the recent arrival of Rise of the Ronin and Dragon's Dogma 2, we're taking a look at the games that have most transported us to another time or place. Also this week, Rosie begs us to consider the rats, and Dave tells us his Star Trek fantasy. So, prepare to listen long and prosper. This is the PlayStation Access Podcast. Hello and welcome to the PlayStation Access Podcast, the official podcast of PlayStation UK. I am your host today, I'm Rob, and joining us we have Rosie and Dave.
Oh, I love how we were both just like, how do we, who
we were, sorry. We were so unprepared.
I'm sorry there were no puns.
Is this a new, this is the new regime?
I'm just not very good at thinking them up. And
that is that is not true, because every time Ash used to do a pun, you'd always do a really good pun.
Yeah, you just slide in and just be like, here's my interpretation of a pun.
Well, no puns today, sadly. It's the first week post Ash, and I just
it's a new world.
I just didn't feel like I could bring myself to do it.
It's too painful.
It is too painful.
I understand.
The emotions are too raw.
They are.
But the show must go on.
Yes.
And on today's show, we've got our main feature in which we will be talking about gaming worlds that have transported us to a wonderful time and place. We have some games that have come out very recently that have sparked that discussion, which we will get onto later. But we also have comments of the week from our community using the hashtag PodSquad.
PodSquad.
Yes, yeah. I really went for that one. Yeah.
PodSquad's always there. And then we have Before We Go, where we're going to talk about some things outside of gaming. But before we get into all of that, we must ask the question, what's new?
What's new? I didn't know if we were doing it or not.
We always do it. We always do it now, Rosie.
Okay, always do it now. Now I know.
Okay, so what is new this week? There are two things that are very new. Okay. So new, they both come out on the same day, was yesterday.
Oh, wow.
So on the 22nd of March, we had both Rise of the Ronin and Dragon's Dogma 2 coming out on PS5, which is, we're just being spoilt there.
I think they need to have a chat.
They do.
And go, we've been unfair on players here, because now they either have to play both of us at the same time, or they have to choose. I don't want to choose.
No.
In all honesty, all video game companies need to have a big chat and say, okay, let's
should
all...
we stop making games for a bit, everybody?
Should we just
finish the ones we've already made?
Yeah, they just need to have a little bit of a schedule, and it's like, your game's fantastic, we know this, but we'd appreciate it. And they're like, yeah, that's fine. Like, you're going to have a brilliant game as well. And then they all just have a nice cup of tea.
Would it be so hard? We have to say at the time of recording that we haven't got our hands onto these yet. So I can't say, all I can say is how much I want to.
Yeah, well,
these are two big, exciting games at the start of the year.
We can be very excited about them, of course. Rise of the Ronin, the new game from Team Ninja.
Yes.
So the developer of Nioh and of Ninja Gaiden. So you can kind of get a sense of what the challenge in the combat is going to be like, I imagine. Quite challenging.
Yes.
But also on top of that, it's the first time I think they've really sort of let loose on a big open world. Like, it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
And I cannot wait to explore it, despite the fact I'll almost certainly get my ass kicked every time I encounter anything.
I think it is really exciting for the kind of masters of that kind of combat experience to take that away from their kind of traditional game type and apply it to more of an open world. Seems like this, you know, this world looks fantastic as well. It's an era that I'm really interested in and excited about, that kind of era of Japan as it started opening up its borders and being visited by outsiders, the end of this kind of shogunate, I think it is. And yeah, I think that, you know, the open world looks beautiful. Moving around it looks fantastic.
The grapple gliding combo.
Yeah.
Just love that.
Yeah, that, I mean, that should be just prerequisite in every open world game. Doesn't matter what the setting is. Don't care where we are. Or it doesn't matter who you are.
Can you glide?
Just for some reason, you have a grapple and you can glide afterwards. That feels important to me. And then there's Dragon's Dogma 2.
Oh.
Yes.
Which, I mean... massive, equally exciting, beautiful.
I thought the first Dragon's Dogma I didn't think it had much luck in that it came out
around the same kind of time as Skyrim.
Yeah.
And it was always, you know, Skyrim always overshadowed it, I think. But the first Dragon's Dogma was so good.
Yeah.
It was really unique as well. And Dragon's Dogma 2 feels like, you know, this is the game. This is everything that we wanted Dragon's Dogma to be, now feels like it is in Dragon's Dogma 2. So going around with a party of adventurers, fighting monsters Shadow of the Colossus style, where you're like climbing up them. My favourite memory from the first game was being inside a snake's mouth and like holding its mouth open.
Oh my God.
Whilst other people were like hacking at its neck. Oh,
great time. Great memories.
Oh, yeah. Good times.
From
good
what
times.
I've seen a little bit of a gameplay from a preview event that a member of the team went on, and they had a dragon that was like possessing one person. It had it in its hands and was going like to like control its mind. Meanwhile, someone else was on its head and just slashing it at the same time. I was like, this is gold. I love this.
I do love it. It's got the patented pawn system. That's
yes.
PAWN.
Yes,
where
that's important.
You have AI controlled companions. And interestingly, you might be able to get some PlayStation Access pawns.
Excitingly, I think.
Yes, very excitingly. We've created them. So look forward to those.
Which is one of the coolest things. Like,
I made mine really realistic, like as close to actual me as I possibly could get. So I've made a very boring, bald man with a little bit of a belly.
Well, you say that, but because Ash and I created our characters after you two.
Yeah.
And Ash went first out of the two of us, and she went with like her actual height.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we put them on the character scale, and then you two were there, you were both so much taller than us. I have no idea what height you put.
I put my actual height.
Was it really?
Yeah.
In the game, it looked like you got was so much taller. And I'm like, I swear you're not that much taller.
I think it's just Ash is... been wearing big DMs.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing.
And
yeah.
You think she's taller than she is. She's not that tall. Because Rob was 187 centimetres, I remember. And I'm 180 centimetres.
Yeah.
Which is...
But Dave also made like a beast. Did you see Dave's character?
Yeah,
His beast looked more like him than my actual realistic human looks like me. Like, it was uncanny what Dave managed to do
with
that.
I'm a beastron.
You are.
I had a lot of fun with that. It's got my BCG scar. And
he read his BCG scar. This is how sophisticated the character creator in Dragon's Dogma 2 is, by the way. You can alter the position and the size of the scars.
The rotation.
It's amazing.
Dude, I did that as well. I've got one little face scar, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's go really in depth. So I got
cool.
a little dash, and I just put it on my face.
That's great. Like, there's a level that you can even remove individual teeth if you
crazy.
Want to. It's so cool. Well, I can't wait to dive in.
No, and I think, you know, not that fantasy worlds are ever kind of out of style, but it feels like with the success of Baldur's Gate 3 last year, it feels like it's the right time now for a new fantasy world. I'm like, everyone's like, oh, that was good. We really enjoyed that. Go for some more fantasy.
High
and then
fantasy,
Dragon's Dogma 2 is like, oh, how about me? Yes, you will do.
In PlayStation Plus update news, very excitingly, extra and premium members can now get their hands, you'll like this, Dave, on Marvel's Midnight Suns.
Please play Marvel's Midnight Suns, everyone. Please. Please.
It was your game of the year, wasn't it?
It was my game of the year 2022. It had only been out for, I think, 3 weeks. And I guessed a little bit, but then I could confirm in early 2023 it was my game of the year 2022. It's so good. Look, I don't want to be apologetic for it being turn-based, but I am being apologetic because some people think like, oh, turn-based, that can't possibly be exciting. And I'm just like, you just try it. I think you should try it. Forget about the turn-based thing. Just give it a go. Amazing characters, amazing world, visually stunning, so much fun. I've got so many photos on my PS5 of photo mode. I love that game. And then it's like, it's got this whole kind of like social simulator thing where you're like making friends with all the different Midnight Suns characters, and I just think it's so unusual and great. And now if you've got premium or extra, there's really no excuse.
Am I right in thinking it's developed by the same studio behind the recent XCOM games?
It is, Firaxis, the creators of XCOM. So you know that the combat is going to be really good, but it's different. It's card based, so if you enjoy any kind of tabletop games, if you like Magic the Gathering, anything like that, honestly, it's so good. It's so, you know, it's one of those games that's easy to pick up and play, and then the more you play, you understand the systems better, and it becomes deeper and deeper and deeper. So it's easy to play and then really fun to master.
I really liked the way you avoided the cliched phrase there, Dave.
Did I?
Easy to play, difficult to master.
Yes.
You just adapted it very slightly.
There's no Dave take on it.
I wouldn't say it was difficult to master. I would just say that it's fun to master. That's the thing. Yeah, it reveals itself to you in a way that I really enjoy. It's great.
For you, Rosie, also included in the most recent Plus Extra and Premium update, we have Resident Evil 3 Remake and Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Trilogy.
Oh, they really are for you, Rosie. Blimey.
There it is.
I just need to say...
I just had to come and say... But yes, so two absolutely brilliant games. Resident Evil 3 Remake is so much fun. It's a lot shorter than Resident Evil 2 Remake, but still the combat is just as fun. You got Nem-Nem chasing you for a bit, and that's a great thrill if you haven't done that already.
What a thrill.
Yeah, when you're like running through Raccoon City and then Nem-Nem trips you up and then whoop, down Jill goes as you see him just lurking towards you more. And then he gets rocket launchers and stuff. It's like just a really fun, thrilling time. I mean, I would always say, like, just play the Resident Evil remakes because they're all fantastic. So definitely give that one a shot. And then the Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney trilogy. Three absolutely fantastic games. I mean, you played the first one, didn't you, Dave?
Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Each of them have got such fantastic cases that you have to find the contradictions for and prove your client's innocence. They've got... like an overall story in each of the games as well. So it's not just a case of you do one case, you do another case. It's like it all links together. They're really fun, energetic, funny characters, and it's so brilliantly written. And I'm sure you've seen, there's got to be, everyone knows of like the objection memes and all the poses and everyone saying how this isn't actually how a court of law would work. But it's
who
just,
wants that game though?
But they are genuinely so much fun and so exciting and thrilling and well written. I cannot promote the Ace Attorney trilogy enough.
I'm just imagining what an actual really dry
courtroom simulator
yeah.
Well, they definitely wouldn't have someone who's just spilling coffee all over the place and then everyone slamming on their tables.
Take your seats, ladies and gentlemen.
And then a parrot comes to the stand and you have to contradict a parrot. Like, I don't think that would be allowed.
I wonder if a parrot has ever been called in evidence. I could imagine it has.
In
real life, a parrot could be a key witness to a crime. Like if a criminal's taught their parrot like a password,
I mean, it can be quite incriminating.
What?
The body's under the floorboard.
Yeah, exactly.
The body's under the floorboard.
Yeah, and he goes. Yeah, where's he heard that? Where did he learn that? Like, no idea.
I'm gonna kill you.
8 p.m. in the park. 8 p.m. in the park.
I reckon it could just happen.
A bad pet for a killer to have. I think a parrot.
Yeah.
Or if you do have one, don't say your plans out loud in front of the parrot.
The thing is, though, it'd probably find a way to get out of his cage. And then I've seen so many videos of birds that end up in people's cupboards. It'll just like start hopping around and you don't even know it's there.
It's a great pet for a victim to have, though.
Yes.
If you think you might be the victim of a crime. I don't know, a bit weird advice, but get yourself a parrot or a dog. A dog is also probably kind of a good, a guard dog might be a better choice.
You can only choose one, a talking parrot or...
Yeah, if I was a burglar, I don't think I'd want to come into a house. I think a caged parrot would be quite intimidating.
Definitely. Mm.
Well, they're very protective over their one owner, aren't they, parrots?
Are they?
Yeah, I've heard from a lot of people that you can be a family, but the parrot could hate everyone else apart from one person.
Oh, really?
That's what I want from my pet.
Yeah, just...
the one and only.
The one and only.
They hate everyone else.
Like, I'm sure not all parrots are like that, but I've just heard from too many friends who have been with parrots and things like that. Like, I've had one friend and he said that his parents had parrots and absolutely hated him and everyone else apart from his mum. He was just like... his mum was just the one the parrot always defended, so...
I had a cockatiel, which is, it's like what a chihuahua is to a wolf, I guess, compared to a parrot. But he could speak a little bit.
What could he say?
He could say, hello, Coco. His name was Coco.
Oh!
He could say, where's David? And he used to sit on my head and sit on my shoulder, and he loved me very much, and he was my best friend forever. And he... didn't really care for anyone else in the family. He didn't dislike them.
Yeah, but he wanted David.
He just wanted to hang around with me all the time. He was great.
Oh, I love Coco. That's so lovely.
Wherever you are, Coco. Heaven, that's where he is. Just so you know.
Of course.
Well, I enjoyed that tangent, but that is the end of What's New This Week. And we are about to move on to our main feature. So in light of both Rise of the Ronin and Dragon's Dogma 2 both being out on PS5, I thought it would be nice in today's main feature to talk about game worlds that have transported us to another time and place. Doesn't necessarily have to be a real time and place. It can be fictional. And I would like to talk about that amongst ourselves. And then also, if we can all come up with something, a game that doesn't exist yet. What is a time and a place that you would like to explore in a video game that you haven't yet? I could kick us off if you like.
Go for it. Take it away.
I cannot think of anything else at the moment other than Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Oh, God.
I just would like an excuse to talk about it. There are so many games, obviously, that have transported us to real time and places. I think one of the most impressive, fairly recent examples would be Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah.
Mm. So evocative.
Incredible.
So grounded in that world. And I love games like that where you can just move through them very slowly. You can just stop and pause and just listen to the world around you. It just feels so wonderful. But Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, I just can't get over how big and varied that game is and how much fun it is to explore the open world in it, because it is ridiculous. I mean, I don't think you've played it yet, Dave, but you've played up to points in the original Final Fantasy VII where Rebirth has expanded on those areas. Do you remember the village of Gongaga, Dave?
Which one was that?
It was in a little foresty area,
yeah,
and you fought the Turks there.
Yeah.
And there was a broken down Mako reactor there.
Oh yeah.
And Scarlet visited it.
Yeah.
And then she left.
Oh, I found a bit
of
material.
And the chat was like, go and find the material.
It is there.
And it was.
To be fair, it was there. It just took a lot of intricate D-pad and X control. But yes, anyway.
That village was like, you know, two or three screens, right?
Yeah.
And the village, maximum. A little cluster of huts.
Yeah.
In Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, that is a whole open world zone.
Right.
Like a lush jungle. And it just visually, it's so distinct from all of the other areas. I mean, all the areas in Rebirth are very visually distinct, but also how you get around them. Each area has a chocobo that you can wrangle, and each chocobo has a very specific ability. So in Gongaga, for instance, there are these massive mushrooms.
Yeah, they just jump on mushrooms.
Chocobos can jump on and just leap really high into the air and start soaring across this jungle. It's just amazing to explore. And then, like, my favourite area to explore so far has been the Cosmo Canyon.
Oh, hard agree. Big agree.
Just absolutely stunningly beautiful. Again, in the original Final Fantasy VII remake, your buggy goes past a little bit of rocky terrain and Cosmo Canyon is perched on a little hilltop. In Rebirth, imagine the Grand Canyon with Cosmo Canyon just perched beautifully right on top.
Wow.
And from Cosmo Canyon, you can look down into this just vast area of open world that you can glide around on a chocobo. Like, your chocobo in this area can glide.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh, it's so amazing. Like, they've taken just tiny little hints of stuff. You know, the world map in Final Fantasy VII is, for the most part, a fairly featureless blank canvas of either grass. Is it grass, is it forest, or is it rock? Basically, that's how varied it gets on the world map in Final Fantasy VII. And in Rebirth, everything has just been beautifully expanded upon, and just being in that world as a fan of Final Fantasy VII, I find very thrilling. But the fact that they've made each open world, it's not just like your classic, here's a checklist of activities for you to go and do. There are towers you can climb and activate, but just the act of getting around these places and how they're designed to really coax you into exploring them, and the methods by which you explore them, they're different in every zone you go to, and it manages to keep this open world exploration thread of the gameplay fresh throughout the entire 50 to 100 hours or however long it's going to take you to complete it. But in terms of fictional fantasy worlds, I don't think they come any bigger or more varied or more fun to explore than Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
That is a large claim indeed.
It is a very good world.
Not just the feeling of it, but particularly, I think, the enjoyment of exploring it. Because that is a real tricky thing to nail.
Definitely.
Because it's not just about how a world looks. or how, but definitely not how big it is. That's not important to me, mm-hmm. size, but the value that you're getting from it, you know, how much it packs into what you're doing, the fun you have of exploring it is really key. So for you to say that that's a big part of the appeal is that they've made it really enjoyable to explore. I mean, I think that is a,
I mean, I find that often with open worlds, you can be just following, like your eyes will be on the mini map so often because you'll just be following the next mission marker or the next collectible objective that you've got to get to. Whereas in Rebirth, I'm looking at the screen so much. Mm. I'm looking at the world. I'm looking at, oh, there's a rope bridge going across there. I wonder how I get to that. And you work out a fun little route to get there. It is like the joy of traversing these worlds because of the different chocobo abilities in each zone. Just really fantastic. And then you get the buggy as well in the desert.
Yeah, it is. I love the music that plays when you get in the buggy. Yeah. It fully makes me go like, yeah, I'm in the buggy now. Like rather than the nice soothing music that plays, it's suddenly more rock piece. I'm like, yeah, look at me and the crew in the buggy. Having a great time in the desert. Yeah. Like, it's great fun.
Yeah. You've got the buggy in the game, Dave.
I do, yeah.
It's not as
much fun.
It's not as much fun as the
original.
Not as much fun as the Rebirth buggy. You can cool it, like you can cool the chocobo by pressing R1 and Cloud will blow his chocobo whistle.
Right.
You can cool the buggy by pressing down on the directional pad, I think, and Cloud has like a little beep beep.
Nice.
Like a little key fob.
Yeah.
And he just summons the buggy.
Yeah.
And the buggy turns up. Brilliant.
That's the dream. When are we going to have that in the real world?
What, a giant buggy that just pulls up when you
just
press the button?
Just a car that I can click my key fob and it just will... It might be 3 hours, you know, if I've travelled. I've got the train somewhere. It's like, oh God,
I've got to drive home.
It can get petrol on its way and whatever. That's what I want. It's interesting. I think worlds I've thought about are very different to what you've mentioned there, Rob,
yeah.
I think, with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And I think that I focused on the sense, on the imagination and the sense of place, which I'm not saying isn't in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth at all, but I guess I realised that I've actually, my games don't have open worlds, but they do, but I think the worlds are fantastic. Mm-hmm. And the first one I was thinking of was Columbia in Bioshock Infinite.
Ah, yes. Mm.
Which the imagination of that world is just incredible. I mean, it's not a nice world to be in, obviously. It's got a lot of problems. It's quite scary.
Got a lot of problems.
People are mean. But a city in the clouds with... I mean, first of all, like, that's just... I think... I mean, we've heard of cities in the clouds before. There's one in Star Wars, for example. But a city in the clouds, the kind of steamboat, but it's in the clouds with roller coasters connecting different kind of islands. That real... physical sensation that everything is made and works and is mechanical, you know, like it sort of, I really appreciate that it shows its workings. Like they've thought, how would a city in the clouds work in this period of time, you know, like a kind of like a 1950s ish sort of idea of what a city in the clouds might be like. And I think that the imagination of that, is every detail is considered. Everything there the whole time is making me think of this place. That's what I think is so good about it, is it's full of wonder, and also that it's ostensibly like it is this idyllic looking place, this kind of dreamland of ideas and what humanity could achieve, and it is the home to quite a grim story with a lot of darkness. Those two opposing ideas, like taking something, it's like, you know, like the circus, how the circus could be scary, or kids' stories, things that kind of like a clown, something kind of imagined for good but
turned evil.
Are your legs okay?
Yes, they are. I'm just sort of thinking about it.
I'm rearranging
my legs
and see
again
your
and
legs
again.
Panicking, thinking about this world.
I think that was, and I should say, that's the Bioshock Infinite is the only Bioshock game I've played. So I played like a little bit of,
you'd love Rapture.
Of Bioshock. I've seen like a tiny bit of Rapture.
Mm.
I haven't played 2. But Infinite for me, it just nailed that sense of wonder and place. I think the sense of place based on like really kind of nothing at all. It's out of someone's head.
Yeah.
But it feels so detailed. I just think it's a fantastic place to explore. I really love exploring it. I mean, I love that game anyway. It's a fantastic game, but the place is such a big part of it. It couldn't, you know, it needs to be there to tell that story. You couldn't transport that story to a different place, I think, and it really work as well.
Yeah.
The other game I wanted to talk about with just worlds that I've kind of really loved are the Dishonored games, which again just have just so much detail, and it feels I don't know how long these developers can spend on just thinking about the world and talking about it amongst themselves and deciding, because I think it must be a huge undertaking, because it's not an art decision. Like, that is part of it. At some point you have to design the things, but it's understanding just like what it's like to be there, what people think there, what they do there, what how they live, all of these decisions that they must have to constantly be talking about before you even put kind of like pen to paper and start drawing it. And then how that weaves into the gameplay mechanics. I mean, Dishonored is a game with incredible gameplay mechanics, and you know I'm a big proponent of gameplay mechanics. They're very important to me. But the world there, it has to be so well constructed to allow for all this kind of experimentation with the gameplay. Obviously, you know, you have powers that mean you can teleport across the map, and you can turn into different creatures and explore little crevices and find different ways into buildings. So, like, that is a huge mechanical task that they have then fit into a world that works, that feels like right. It doesn't feel like, oh, we need to have a way for someone to get into the building here if they're a rat. So, you know, we'll make that happen. It's like they're so hand in hand. The decisions of the world building are so hand in hand with the gameplay mechanics. I think it's an absolute kind of like world class example of a world being realized. It's just, I don't know, it just seems perfect to me.
I just really like the idea that they've strongly considered the rats. Like, where are the rats
going to go? You've got to consider the rats.
You've got to consider the rats, bless them.
Big part of Dishonored. But yeah, I think that they're just two incredible... I'm really struggling not to say that the world is actually a character in the game. But...
Because you know I don't like that.
I know you don't like that.
Oh, go on, say it, just for Rob.
But in those games, it's possible that the world... is a character. It's possible.
It's not. It's a setting. It's a really beautiful, evocative setting. I think saying, when people say, oh, the world is like a main character in the game, I think that does a disservice to the importance of settings. It's like saying a setting can only be so good, and if it gets even better than that, it's like a character.
You Unless
can
it's
say
a
characterful
film, like...
setting, yes, but it's a setting.
What about...
Just a brilliant one.
Have you seen Monster House? That house is a character.
Well, if it's a character, then
it's also
a character.
A setting. The action takes place in the house, and then you find out the house is a character as well.
Maybe this is how this happened.
Yeah,
they were having this argument, and they were like, I'll show you that. Oh, so a setting can't be a character, can it? What if it can?
The house is a character.
No, I think you're right. I don't miss
no, I do
the,
agree.
I don't
I'm
want to
joking.
Do any disservice to the idea of a setting, because I think it's more, I guess I meant how much of the story is told through it. I guess, which I associate more with characters. But actually, that's silly, because there's loads of environmental storytelling and things in games, and just found notes and whatever that tell you a lot about what's going on, which are very much in the setting. But I think they're two incredible, incredible settings.
Similar vibes, Bioshock and Dishonored. I feel like they're from the same... They're in the same vein.
Same
yeah,
family. Same
yeah,
little family.
Definitely.
First person, magical power... combat in a weird, scary, evocative
with a
world.
Bit of stealth here and there.
Yeah, yeah. Also, you know, the sheen has come off them both. Like, certainly in Dishonored 2, slightly more positive place that's gone bad than Dishonored 1. But yeah, I think, yeah, dystopian kind of ugliness
yeah.
applied to this formerly nice setting.
How about you, Rosie? What's a time and a place that you have enjoyed exploring in video games?
Well, I had two examples that I'd love to talk about. But I'm really liking this, because we've all come from different angles of this. And both the games I want to talk about really take me into their world because a lot, well, I mean, not only because I love them and I think they're stunning and beautiful, but also because of the sound design. Like, listening to the sounds in the world really pulls me into the universe. And I want to talk about Bloodborne and the first Tomb Raider game, because both of those are just prime examples of audio done so well, because they're pretty much silent throughout. It's not as if you always have music playing. Mm. You only have music playing when it's necessary to the atmosphere or the moment that you're in. So walking around Yharnam in Bloodborne and literally you just hear like the villagers go like, "A foul beast!" And then all the weapons like being dragged along the floor, the fire crackling, and then you look around the corner and wow, it's a really big fire. They're burning a beast over there. Just really, just like walking around these areas.
Yeah,
you did
yeah.
hear it happening.
What are they doing? Oh, they're burning a beast over there.
Oh,
I probably won't go down there.
It's another Tuesday for them, isn't yeah. it?
Beast burning Tuesday.
Beast burning Tuesday.
Two for one.
But like, and seeing how with Yharnam, for example, how it all leads into the next sort of section of the city and the town.
Yes.
And how that, and then eventually leads into you going into a cathedral and then you end up going into the forest. And, you know, at one point you end up going into a school. It's just the way that that world completely connects itself, but it all feels, I mean, you do have a couple of portals when they're like, go through this mystical portal. Whoa, you're in a school. What's going on here? But still just exploring the areas. I just feel as if I'm completely engulfed in these worlds. And even if you just hear like little feet tapping away and then you think something's coming after me and they get slightly louder and slightly quicker, the amount of times that has happened to me in Bloodborne and I'm immediately on edge because I am in that world. Mm-hmm. It just completely takes me there and I love it to pieces. And then similarly with Tomb Raider, when you're walking around, most of the time it is literally just Lara's footsteps just constantly going like,
oh, I remember.
And then you hear, like, I was even playing the remaster yesterday. I went into an area and I'm loving it because I'm being refreshed on how I remember a lot of things, but some things I forget. And there's been so many moments where I've run and then I just hear like this, and it's a boulder like about to come down.
That was a great impression.
I've grown up with the noise of the boulder just going like just rolling down. And again, I feel like I am Lara. I am exploring these tombs. I am exploring these different caves and jungles and things. And then when you are discovering something and you just hear the music suddenly be like, ding, 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 ding. But that's all it does. That's all the music does. Just a little something like, what have you found here? And already I was thinking, what's around this corner? But then the beauty of using the music then and there is just like, oh no, I have found something here. This is very exciting. And also just the design of the areas where, because it's all, they're all old relics and old tombs and things, so everything is broken down, and then here you are, athletic Lara Croft, like climbing all of these ruins and things like that within this place. It's just, oh, it's just so beautifully done, and I love exploring both areas and both of them. I always just sit there and I'm just like, yes, I am my hunter. I am Lara Croft. I am in these worlds, exploring these areas, getting attacked by wolves or by beasts and villagers. Like, everything's coming at me.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah, even the fact that the T-Rex is there. The fact, like, because you might be like, how's a T-Rex been able to live in this cave for all these years? But the way that the game builds up on the suspense, again, it's the, like in the last podcast we did, the storytelling skeleton, and they've just dabbled them here and there. So even then when you're exploring, you're like, I'm in a dangerous place. Like, skeletons, why aren't there more skeletons? Surely there should be more. But it's that specific build-up. And then when you do see the T-Rex, not only is it shocking and you're like, ah! But a part of me is also just like, this is silly, but I'm so believing that this has actually happened, with like also the little raptors that come in, the little red ones and stuff. So yeah, both of them I just love to pieces. And I think not only the design of them and the level design and the how artistically they look, the sound is something that really just takes me out of my world and pops me into theirs.
It's so interesting that you'd pick up on the sound. Definitely an overlooked aspect, I think, because usually because sound is so well done, I think, to be fair. And I don't know, but Well, I don't know what I'm trying to say, really. I just think it's really interesting that you picked on that especially.
I think
sound is a massively overlooked kind of area of games, full stop. It's and usually because I think, yeah, it sounds done very well and it works, but it does play such a big place in setting you. It's one of those senses that you maybe take more for granted than, like, sight, for example. Like, I can shut my eyes. I kind of know that I'm looking. I can choose where I'm looking. But sound is kind of, it's passively happening to me. I have to try quite hard to not hear something.
Yeah.
So I think that's maybe why we don't recognize it so much. But you're absolutely right. Like, it's a huge part. And when you're imagining a new place, obviously people think about the design, the look of a place. But, like, what does it sound like is so important. Like, what is it? It can give you that intrinsic feeling you don't even know that you're experiencing.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Even, for example, with Tomb Raider, a lot of the moments where you realize something wrong's about to happen is you hear the sound first and then you see it. Yeah. Even something when you go into, like, a little trial area and there are swords on the ceiling and they drop down, you hear that the first, and then you think, what was that noise? And the next thing you know, if you're not paying attention, a sword's just dropped down on you and Lara's gone. It's the sound that is, like, carrying the suspense and your suspense as you go through it. But I was exactly the same with Resident Evil. I've spoken about the sound design in Resident Evil 2 to pieces, but that is another prime example of feeling like you're in RPD, you're in Raccoon City, and you're just walking around and you just literally hear the zombies moaning. I think it's because probably Resident Evil was the first instance where I started to really appreciate sound and think about it in, like, the very first Resident Evil game back on PS1, because that is literally just, again, very similar to Tomb Raider, walking around. It's just your footsteps in these halls and locations, but it's the sound that really does make you feel as if I am indoors in this abandoned mansion that's absolutely giant. I am now outside and I can hear the wind blowing, but also, like, faint sounds of just, like, and all that thing. It really builds up the world for me. And, well, there you go. Now I've just mentioned basically four games that take me into the universe. But yeah, though they're just a little take I have on, like, what takes me into a world. And I think sound, as well as all the gorgeous visuals, is a big thing for me.
Yeah, the Tomb Raider example especially, I think, is really reminds me of that feeling of exploring somewhere that no one's been for hundreds of years.
Yeah,
in those. There was a real magical sense of exploration in those games, and scary as well. I remember playing, I think, The Last Revelation. You just hear the odd sort of little crumble of rock.
Yeah.
The odd little just some kind of environmental noise happening somewhere. And then, yeah, like, any sort of noise that is beyond the normal in Tomb Raider basically means you're about to die.
Anything that's not Lara's feet. Like, even a little bat being like, in the original, I'm immediately like, guns out, where's it coming from? Yeah. And then, like, looking for them immediately. Because, hey, when they get on you, they're going to drain your health. Hey, have I told you about Tomb Raider bats?
Yeah, you could almost say, with the sound in Tomb Raider, it's like a character in itself.
It's a character in itself.
No, but I don't see that belittle sound. Is it? So why can't you just say it sounds really good?
So moving on to worlds that we haven't explored, places and times in video games. Are there any times or places that you would like to explore in a game that you feel you haven't yet?
I've got a really stupid one.
Please, fire away.
My really stupid one is I love the Katamari games, but I've always would love to see that sort of colourful, vibrant world, but from the other perspective. Like, as in, I am one of those, like, you're just, so when you're doing Katamari, you see loads of people just running around and doing their business and stuff, chasing a cat. I would love to have the control of me just running around this world, doing whatever I fancy, and then suddenly a massive Katamari comes around the corner. And then
an open world game where you have to run away from a giant ball of rolling stuff.
Yeah, imagine that. But then, like, even when you go on the ball, you can, like, still see what's happening until the time is up, and then you go into the Cosmo, and then you are the Cosmos, and you see the King of Cosmos, and you can literally see him thinking, yes, I'm going to turn you into a star, and then up you go, and then you're like, oh my god, this is death now. Like, imagine how interesting that would be, just to be in this colourful, vibrant world, exploring it, having a lovely time, lovely music playing at the same time, but there is the threat of the Katamari ball just coming around, and it's coming around the corner, and it's getting bigger.
It's getting bigger and bigger.
It's getting bigger and bigger. But even and then there's also like a mode where there isn't the Katamari ball, and you can just traverse through these areas, because Katamari has actually got like a big levels that are all linked together, but you just don't realize it until you get bigger. So even just to be like a a normal human size, and then or an average size, and then just walking around, and then suddenly being like, oh, now I'm in this town, and then you have to go on the trek to suddenly get to the Great Wall of China or something like that. Whereas in Katamari, it's just a case of you get bigger and bigger, and then wow, look at you, you're able to roll over to the Great Wall of China super easily. Like,
does the game end? I mean, we've gone from exploring a world to the game mechanics now, but do you die if you get rolled up into the ball, or are you then
I think your fate is, I mean, I guess, yeah, your fate would be inevitable, but you can either become one with the cosmos or turned into stardust, depending on how well the prince does.
So you died.
It's a bit like
Platter. But that's like the end of the game.
It's a bit
end
like
of
that
adventure.
Game we played on the Platter Frenzy, where you had to avoid the balls.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, just like that. For as long as possible. Yeah. So really, I'm saying that, but that was a very stressful time for me.
I think it would be stressful. Giant ball. I assume that you see the Katamari ball starts off very small as well.
Yeah,
your average human size. And you see like this small kind of ball of like lint rolling around.
Yeah.
Somewhere, you see it really early on.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the
Maybe
city.
It's like the snitch. Like if you can find it when it's small, you can squash it. You can cancel it out.
Yeah, or maybe.
But then it gets bigger and bigger. And then suddenly you realise you haven't seen it in 30
just a
minutes.
Big ball of buildings is rolling around.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh no.
You've left it unattended. Because even Katamari, when you do have those, like, when you do start out really small and then humans seem absolutely massive and you go into them and then you just get launched to the other side of the map. Imagine, yeah, like you see the Katamari and you just see it like tap against your leg and go, see it go vroom, all the way across the other side of the city and stuff.
That's a cool idea for an asymmetrical multiplayer game, I think.
Yeah.
Four people controlling people in a city, one person controlling a little ball.
And they have to get bigger.
They have to secretly get bigger. And whilst you're bigger as the human, you can like pick up and defeat the ball.
Yeah.
When it gets big, there are obviously like maybe levers you can pull that make it go smaller again.
Yeah.
Well, but if you put obstacles in front of them and they're rolling, if it's too big, they can lose pieces. That's also a gameplay mechanic in Katamari. If you sometimes get a bit confident or if you accidentally charge into a wall, you can have parts of your Katamari flying off. So that could be a thing. You have to put traps down and make them charge into them.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
Get in touch, any developers listening to
this. I feel like we've just made a Katamari spin-off game now.
I wasn't expecting this conversation.
Who saw that?
Who saw that coming?
No one. No. Like the ball. No one saw the ball coming either.
Have you got a time and a place, Rob, that you have, but you'd like to see explored?
Yes, I do. Very specific one as well. Yeah. Basically, I want Dark Souls in space.
Ooh.
That's what I want. I want a game that tells its story in the same way that Dark Souls does. So environmentally, not obviously, in a way where you have to really sort of explore it and dig it out. But I love the idea of just, I guess Returnal is similar in terms of its vibe, like mysterious story where you're just dropped on this unknown planet. But instead of being like a roguelike bullet hell shooter, it would be a really slow burn Dark Souls-esque adventure where you have to explore just this strange.
Will it just be one planet or?
I think so.
Yeah,
just an alien planet or a moon somewhere in space. Something mysterious has happened. I love weird sci-fi. I love weird, unexplained, slightly scary sci-fi.
Is it going to have to be like an intimidating vibe planet? Because if it's like an original planet, it could also be like absolutely colourful, like the Outer Worlds.
I prefer it to be. I mean, what I'm imagining is being on like some kind of moon, I guess, and you look up into the sky and you can see maybe the planet around which you're orbiting. Maybe there's a, you know, you come out of a derelict spaceship. There are a few scattered settlements. No one really lives there. You can, you know, there's a few strange alien beings that are quite dangerous. But mostly I want it to be an exploration style game.
Would you be an astronaut, or is it like, have you created a technology that...
Your character doesn't know anything about themselves. They've just woken up. They've woken up. Their spaceships crashed. So sort of like, you know, the setup's Returnal, basically.
The setup's Returnal, but the feel is Dark Souls.
The feel is Dark Souls. And whereas Returnal obviously has its biomes, this would be, you know, space. You're in space, essentially.
Just space, endless space.
It's a mix between Returnal, No Man's Sky, and Dark Souls.
Mm.
That's what I'm envisaging. But I would love to explore. I love exploration in the dark. I'm terrible at the combat in Dark Souls and Bloodborne, but I absolutely love exploring the worlds. Mm. They're so evocative and beautifully created, and I really love how they tell their stories. I really like how you have to go out of your way to unpick the lore. Like, the game's not trying to tell you a story. The story and the lore it feels like it's happened in that world already, and you can find it out about it or not. I really enjoy that, and I'd love a sci-fi version of that.
Are there going to be like NPCs that you can interact with? I'm just thinking about the Dark Souls angle.
I don't know, Rosie.
Will you have your own? Will there be your own patches in space?
No, imagine
getting betrayed in space.
Betrayed. Oh, betrayed.
Yeah, sorry, my mouth sort of glued for a bit, but betrayed. Just went betrayed. Imagine that. You had a character like Patches and then that you trust them in space.
Yeah, I don't think Patches exists in the game that I would like to play. But, you know, I've not got like a fully formed idea. Mm. I like the vibe. I'd like the Dark Souls vibe in space. I think that would be cool.
That would be very cool. How about you, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of actually want to build on Rob's a little bit. I would love what you said, Rob, made me really think about some episodes of Star Trek that I've seen, and I would love to be basically on like the Enterprise or a ship of similar scale, and there to be a phenomena that I am investigating, exploring. There's some really good episodes of Star Trek. There's a Star Trek Voyager episode where the captain has been away on shore leave or something and comes back and to the rendezvous point and the ship's not there, and she like, you know, does a scan or something and finds the ship is like, you know, 5 light years away, or it's not where it's meant to be, and she goes over there and it's like drifting through space, and she gets back on board and she can't get hold of anybody and she doesn't know where anybody is, and she's walking through the ship trying to piece together what has happened. I want to do that. I don't want there to be the threat of death. I want the threat to be like weird, like you're saying, like what is going on, weird kind of phenomena. Like time and space, things are happening, interacting with ship systems. I'm fascinated by big ships. I love the idea. I love in games. I love the idea in the real world of having like part of the fantasy of Star Wars for me is like Han Solo owning the Millennium Falcon. I love that he and Chewie own the Millennium Falcon. It's big and they have to crawl around inside it and fix it up and it doesn't work, and then, you know, they really love it. I love that. I love the fantasy of having a... I love in a game when you get your own starship and you get to go places, the freedom that it gives you. And a big ship that's massive and is, you know, supposed to be run by several people. It's like one of the reasons that I love the idea of exploring Alien Isolation's world.
Yeah.
But I can't. I want basically that, but without the alien, but with a weirdness, a thing that I am investigating and trying to solve, like a mystery, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I think if you gave Alien Isolation, like at your own pace, you played it, I think you could have the same experience you had with Resident Evil 2 when you played it. And at first you were like, oh, but then when you're like, if you do it for Alien Isolation, yes, it's intense, but I think you would get so engulfed in the world with it.
The thing with Alien Isolation is that you can't fight the alien. There's no... You can, you know, at best you can deter it. But even then, as I found out when I was the boss, sometimes it's just like, oh, I don't care about your deterrence. Whereas, you know, in Resident Evil, most enemies you can injure or kill.
Mm.
And you feel you feel like you've got some agency. But anyway, I would love to do something like that. That's kind of building on yours, Rob. And then my less exciting and slightly, you know, less... I think this is a really difficult question, by the way, because I realised that actually we have been treated to some incredible times and places from our world in games, and also, obviously, things that have come out of sci-fi fantasy, people's heads. And I had to think about Star Wars because I couldn't resist, and I would just love to explore, like, Mos Eisley, not as a Jedi, just as a person who lives in that town, and be a kind of smuggler or something, just someone, just a normal person in the Star Wars universe really excites me. It's one of the reasons I'm interested in Star Wars Outlaws so much, is because I think that that is the real fantasy for me, is not the Jedi and the Force. It's just those worlds are so distinct and clear in my mind that I just want to engulf myself in those. And there is loads of opportunities to do that. But I think that something more focused, usually in Star Wars games, they're a little bit, you know, bigger. Their scope is larger. Let's go to a few different worlds or a few different places. I would like something focused on definitely one planet, but probably one place in that planet, and just really, like, think about what it is like to be there, what those characters, how they exist, what their lives are like. I would love that, like any of those games I previously mentioned, but in the Star Wars universe, I'd find fascinating. But we really have been treated to some. I was thinking, like, you know, oh, maybe haven't seen loads like around the time of the dinosaurs, and I was thinking about Far Cry Primal. And I was like, oh, the distant future, there's loads in the distant future. And I was thinking about all the amazing history that Assassin's Creed games has brought to life, all those times and places. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's lots more. But I was thinking about a more realistic kind of medieval experience, and then remembered Kingdom Come Deliverance. We've really been...
We've done them all.
There's so much out there. It's incredible.
One that I don't think has been done, and one that I would love to see, is mythological Britain.
Ooh.
So not historical Britain. I would love to see a game do for Celtic and British myth what God of War did for Greek and
right.
Norse.
Yeah.
Because I read a book last year called Storyland by Amy Jeffs, which sort of reimagines a lot of British myth. It's like the history of Britain, but told through its myths.
Right.
And there's so much there. I was reading it thinking, this would be amazing if someone set a video game here. There's like all the creation myths of Britain, like the giants that first settled here. There's you know, there's dragons. You get onto like King Arthur and all of that kind of thing. It's so rich, so fascinating, yeah, and so weird and scary sometimes as well.
Mm.
And we've got so much here already that you can just walk around and explore. Like the legend of, I don't know, if have you heard of Wayland Smithy?
Wayland Smithers?
I was going to say, Simpsons-like.
No, there's an old legend of like, and the story of it is quite dark, about this mortal blacksmith who is in love with like a divine being, and he makes her all of like these precious rings, and eventually she gets bored with the mortal life though, and sort of like flies away, and he's always waiting for her to come back. Okay. And just hammering out these beautiful pieces of jewelry, thinking, oh, when she comes back, she's going to absolutely love all this jewelry I've made. And then one day, like a jealous king comes along and steals all of his gold, and in like a fit of horrible rage, I think he goes and murders this king's children in a really brutal, it's horrible. Like, it's a really, really dark story. But you can literally visit Wayland Smithy in real life.
Oh, wow.
It's like, it's thousands of years old. I think older than Stonehenge. And you can just walk up to it and go inside it.
Wow.
And obviously the story that's been attached to it is a mythological fantasy creation. But it felt very like, that would be someone that Kratos would fight.
Right.
Like, I can imagine Kratos fighting the old giants of British myth.
Yeah.
I think it would be really fantastic. Like, there's quite a lot of overlap with Norse as well. So Odin appears in quite a lot of these stories as well. And that's where we get the term Wednesday from. I think I might have mentioned this on a previous podcast.
Oh, I've forgotten.
So there was like a day where everyone would praise Odin, and it was Woden's day. His other name was Woden, which eventually became Wednesday.
Well, Thursday's Thor's day, isn't
it? Indeed.
Yeah, and I think Friday might be
that's for fry-ups.
Yeah.
But I might be wrong, but there's no game I can think of that's really been set in mythological Britain.
No.
And it's so full of stories from all different myths as well. I think it would be amazing to have a God of War style game set in mythological Britain. Anyway.
You just spawned a really stupid idea, but when you were talking about like fighting all these giants and stuff, I just thought about a game where you're like, let's say you're like God of War, but you're fighting the Gruffalo or the Hungry Hungry Caterpillar, like all these.
It's more children's stories.
Yeah, like children's stories, but they are like, you know, beasts and stuff in it. So
I mean, the Hungry Hungry Caterpillar, I can imagine a really grotesque.
You imagine a horror game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it just gets bigger and bigger.
Hungry. Yeah. Just like scuttling along the walls.
With its many legs.
Yeah, because I was thinking
eating.
Of the Gruffalo.
It just eats and eats and eats, doesn't it? Yeah. The Hungry Caterpillar.
Yeah.
It just keeps on going.
A great horror game.
So I just thought the Gruffalo and then led to the Hungry Hungry Caterpillar, and I thought this would also be a great game.
Well, I hope there are some developers listening to this podcast because we've just come up with a bunch of gold.
That's like, right. Yeah.
So. Thank you very much for those lovely thoughts. That is the end of our main feature. We are now going to proceed to the comments of the week, which are community highlights from our hashtag PodSquad.
PodSquad.
It's time
for comments of the week.
Not bad.
It was
not bad.
A vibe of sadness in the air.
Ash.
But we have got some comments from our lovely community, which I'm going to read out now. We have a comment from Wobble J Gaming.
What a great name.
From the Romance in Video Games pod, which I don't think we were on, Dave. That was when Samantha Bayette was here.
Yes.
But Wobble J Gaming says, hashtag PodSquad.
PodSquad.
In keeping with the topic, have any of you met a friend or significant other through video games or the love of gaming? Thank you for the podcasts. Absolutely smashing it.
Oh, great question.
Well, I mean, my current boyfriend also shares the exact same amount of love for gaming that I do. So I think, like, I met him kind of through, like knowledge of video game and stuff, but I've like met him because he worked for someone who I knew, but then we got talking literally all just about video games. I remember like being in my old office job and talking about Undertale with him when we were like, you know, chatting. So many memories. Well, I played Final Fantasy X when we were long distance. I remember those days very well. So
I think that counts, Rosie.
Yeah, I think for me, my current boyfriend, we have just the same amount of love for gaming. So definitely.
I don't know. I haven't met a significant other through gaming, but I have introduced gaming to my significant other. She's playing The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered at the moment.
Oh.
And it is amazing because she is loving it.
She knows the story of the first one.
She's played the first one as well.
Right.
She doesn't know the story of the second one, so she's been enjoying that right way. And she finds it so tense. She has to play it usually in like little 15-minute bursts.
Oh!
She will pause when it gets too much.
I can completely empathize with that. Like Last of Us Part 2 is when I've finished a session of that, you need to have a little lie down.
Yeah,
it's
definitely
so tense.
But she's loving it. And it's like it feels like really nice part of our relationship that we can share that gaming. Like she doesn't play loads of games, but like I said, she's played The Last of Us games and others as well. And we've been playing It Takes Two together.
Oh, that's a brilliant,
Good. So yes, she had some experience of games as a kid and then didn't play them forever, and now it's a nice thing. But I've met friends through gaming a little bit as well. Friends of friends, usually, you know, playing like Destiny or Helldivers 2 at the moment. I've been in kind of in groups with a friend and their friend and getting to know people that way. I think it's a fantastic way to meet people. It's, you know, it's really, really wonderful. But yes, no significant others. How about you, Rob?
No, I've not met anyone through games. But my sister met her now husband in Burnout Paradise.
Wow.
Really?
So they just met playing Burnout Paradise online together.
From Burnout Paradise
and now their husband
to
and
Marital
wife.
Paradise.
Yes. Yes, indeed. But I also do remember the very first online game I ever played was Metal Gear Solid 3. And I made an enemy online. Didn't make a friend.
I remember this.
It was just someone who was always online at the same time that I was online. And Metal Gear Solid 3 is probably the only online multiplayer game where I actually got really good at it. I was pretty good.
Yeah.
I was regularly the person on my team who was top of the scoreboard. You know, if our team won, it was usually because of me. And he was like a similar level of skill. And we'd always seem to be on other teams. Like the amount of fights I had with this guy.
Yeah.
And we ended up developing like a begrudging respect for one another.
Yeah.
And I remember when they shut down the servers for Metal Gear Solid 3, I remember the last game I had with this person. I don't know anything about them. Don't know their real name, anything. And we shared just like quite a nice, just a simple goodbye to each other. Because we knew it was like the last day that Metal Gear Solid 3 servers were going to be online.
Yeah.
So I think we just, you know, it was nothing overly sentimental. And
we
trash talked each other, and more than trash talked each other for a long time. And I think we just said, like, it's been nice playing with you.
Yeah.
And that was it. Yeah.
Aww.
So that was nice.
Yeah. That is nice.
Yeah.
It is. Our games are a fantastic way to meet people.
Indeed.
And in a way, we all met each other through games.
Mm, we did. But moving on. Sora Fang 44, and this is from the Platy Week, Rosie versus Tekken 8 live stream.
Oh, my one, okay.
Sora Fang 44 says, hashtag PodSquad.
PodSquad.
Hashtag VodSquad. I super enjoyed this stream, like always. I loved Rosie's Jun outfit. It looked absolutely incredible. My question for Rosie, speaking of customizing, have you made anyone from your boyfriend list in the game?
No, I haven't actually, because when I've been playing Tekken, I was like, when it came out, that was when we heard the news that we were doing the Frenzy Week. So I was very much like doing everything I could to prepare for the Platinum. So June was actually the first time that I did delve into the customization myself. But now I definitely want to. Imagine like an embryo. Embryo could be... Oh, who would make a good Embryo? Oh, I don't know. Embryo, the King of Cosmos. Sully, imagine like you just fight and then you see someone looking like Victor Sullivan from Uncharted.
Well, Rosie, if you had to make one character from your boyfriend list, who would it be?
I'd probably say Victor Sullivan would be the easiest to start off with.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'd love to, for example, do a Barry Burton, but I don't think, like from Resident Evil, but I think if I went into a match, the joy a lot of people find from the customization is when you see a character and you're like, oh, they're Leon Kennedy, for example. I don't think people are going to go, oh, look, it's Barry Burton from Resident Evil 1 and Resident Evil Revelations 2. So I'd probably do a Victor Sullivan first, because I think that'll be a nice, simple warm-up one to learn the range of customization. You just get him a shirt, beige trousers, moustache. Like, I think he'd be the...
That's him. Done.
That's him. Hang on, he's actually kind of looking like what you're wearing at the moment.
Oh my gosh.
My God.
Goodness
me. Victor Sullivan right here. But I think that'd be a fun one. But now I definitely do want to do it. Yeah. I definitely want to do it.
Challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted.
We have a comment from Kawa9516 from the A Newcomer Plays Final Fantasy VII Part 8 live stream, who says, hashtag VOD Squad. Hashtag PodSquad. I'm watching this while waiting for my best buddy to arrive in order to unbox my collector's edition for Rebirth, I assume.
Ooh.
And on Saturday, we have rented a whole cinema to play Rebirth on the big screen.
Wow. Oh my
I'm
God.
I'm excited. Can you do that?
I guess
I didn't
you can.
Know that was a thing you could
I
do.
I didn't know that was a thing you could
well,
do.
Well, you could definitely rent cinemas to show movies you want.
Can you like, can I rent you, Odeon, and can you also hook up my PS5 to the projector, please?
Why not?
That is fantastic. I want to do that. Can we do that? We should do that.
Well, yeah.
I mean, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth on a cinema screen with surround sound must be something else.
Yeah. And like the chairs as well. Do you get like the VIP chairs when you hire it out, do you think?
I don't know. I guess you get all of them.
You get
whichever one you want.
Oh, like you get a whole cinema to yourself, the sound, the screen, the VIP chairs, and popcorn.
The popcorn, yeah.
And the popcorn. Oh, that sounds like bliss.
Good. Yeah.
We've now got a comment from the Final Fright community post that we did.
Yeah.
Before we did the Final Fright live stream from Rebel Stormtrooper, who says, hashtag PodSquad.
PodSquad.
I am part of a group that loves playing games and getting trophies. We share our conquests and all the platinums we get. I am currently on 191 platinum trophies.
Congrats.
We also enjoy watching the live streams and always tell each other in the chat when they are going live so we can tune in. Love your content. Oh. Keep up the good work. That's There's lovely. Not really a question there, is there?
Just, nice, though. Just a nice comment.
But it's comments of the week. It's not questions of the week.
Very true.
Yeah. It's comments of the week. It's just a nice comment.
That's just really lovely to hear. Thank you so much for your support and congrats on all of the platinums. That's fantastic. The all
big,
around.
The big 200 coming up.
Yeah.
What's going to be your 200th? You have to pick something good.
What would you pick as your 200th?
The pigeon pee.
Fair, yes. Perfect, absolutely perfect.
And our final comment is from Wiffle Bat Home Run, which I like that. This is from A Newcomer Plays Final Fantasy VII Part 6.
Oh, yeah,
so
great part.
Two episodes previously. There's no hashtag Pod Squad here, so I don't really know what this is doing in our comments.
We cannot read it.
I'll read it anyway. Yeah. Really love watching these episodes. Final Fantasy VII has been my favourite game since I was 6, and so seeing Dave get to experience it for the first time and enjoy it is really heartwarming. Thank you so much, guys. Also, love the good-natured, antagonistic bickering. Reminds me of playing through this with my brother as a kid. A question for Dave. There is a question. What's your favourite moment of the game so far? Hashtag Pod Squad. It's at the end. So what's your favourite moment of the game so far, David?
Oh, God, that's really hard. I don't know.
The time you bioed yourself?
I mean, that was funny. I just keep thinking about Sector 7 crashing down. I think that was quite shocking. That was a shock. For I really thought, because I'd heard of Biggs and Wedge and Jesse before, and I thought they were going to be a much bigger part of the game, and I was shocked when they were killed, and I felt quite angry.
Like Barrett.
And so in that way, I think it's a standout moment for me, because it's quite a big here's the stakes kind of moment for the game. So I think I'd say that. I mean, not weird favourite. There's been so much good stuff, though. I mean, I've had such a good time playing the game so far. There's been loads of funny stuff that has happened. I think
it's a much funnier game than I remember.
It's really funny,
and Rebirth's funny as well.
Yeah, it's and lots of fun. I mean, so many mini games, and it's quite a different game to what I expected, I think, and I'm really really enjoying it. But I've had so many moments, too many to really tell, I think. But that really stands out as a moment that kind of made me think about the story that's being told here and the stakes. And I was surprised that it was like these quite beloved characters, it seemed to me, from someone who'd never played the game before, were just gone like a couple of hours into the game or something. It was like, oh God, that's a big deal.
It was. Should play a remake.
I know. Well, I
and
think,
then Rebirth.
I think I will. I think I will.
And then
now.
Final Fantasy 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
It's made me 16. Really want to, genuinely.
Yes.
I really, really do. And I'm wondering, you know, when that's my only thing is like, do I finish Final Fantasy 7?
Well,
then play
so.
Remake?
I think you should.
Yeah.
If you want to play Remake and really get the most out of it, I would recommend finishing original Final Fantasy 7 first.
Well, I've waited this long, so.
Yeah.
Why not?
They'll just be there waiting for you.
Yeah.
You get to play them both back to back.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Maybe by that time, there'll
the
be
third
another
game,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can just do the trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
What a treat that's going to be.
Maybe you could hire a cinema every day of the week and just power through the whole trilogy.
I'm wiped out financially.
Yeah.
But what a time.
But what a time.
Well, thank you very much, as always, everybody, for your wonderful comments and questions. If you have anything else you'd like to ask us, please leave a comment either on YouTube or on social media using the hashtag Pod Squad. And we will round up our favourites, only our favourites, and read them out in a future podcast episode. So make sure you write something nice. Right.
Bibor bibo.
So we're going to talk about, has anyone got anything they want to talk about outside of gaming to prove that we are real life flesh people?
We are
real life flesh people.
Well, last night I went and saw Dune Part 2. I'm not going to tell you anything about
always it. Always watching things, aren't you, Dave?
Always
going and watching
watched.
Things.
Mm-hmm. I had a big Dune weekend, actually, because I watched Part 1 again on Saturday.
Is there going to be a Part 3, or is that it now?
Do you want to know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it a trilogy?
I believe so. Well, I didn't know. I thought part two might have been the end.
Oh.
Pretty sure it's not. There's going to be a part three.
It's a bit of a hole in terms of my general sci-fi and fantasy knowledge, June. I've never read the book.
Yeah,
I've not seen any of the movies.
It.
Many books. There are many books.
I thought it was just one massive book.
It may have started as one massive book, but there's a whole series now. Oh. So I don't know whether these movies are following the events of this one book several, don't know, but really, I mean, I really enjoyed it. Have you seen the first one, Rosie?
No, I haven't. I've always needed to go to them, though. I do want to see them, yeah. And I'm especially now with Dune 2. I've heard so many people saying phenomenal film.
Yeah.
So I was already interested. Now I'm even more interested.
I think the first one is especially good because I think it does a great job of very quickly explaining the world. It's quite a weird. It's almost more of a fantasy world than it is a sci-fi world. It's more about like kingdoms and houses. There's an emperor and you know, it feels slightly more fantasy in that way. Religion is a big part of it, and beliefs and faith and all this kind of stuff. But to the on the outside, it seems more sci-fi because it's about space. There's space travel and there's planets and there's machinery and that is kind of beyond our imagination. But I think the first one's excellent because it does such a good job of explaining the characters and the world to you very quickly. I think it's really like amazing job that they do there. And then whereas this one is much more about, you know, well, you already understand the world, now we're going to get quite deep into it. So it's a much deeper experience, I think. And it is long. It's like 2 hours 45 minutes or something, which
that's normal movie length these days. Isn't
it is every apparently
film.
Yeah, that's just
what you're going to be massive and long. Spectacular.
So, you know,
gone
make
are
sure
the days of the 90 minute blockbuster.
If you're going to watch in the cinema, which I do obviously highly recommend, make sure you're well fed and watered. Bring have some snacks available. Be around people you like or no one at all if possible, and you know, nice comfy seat. It's worth the premium upgrade, I reckon. But yeah, very much enjoyed that, and it is an excellent movie.
Still do those popcorn buckets that I keep on seeing on social media?
Not at the cinema I went to.
I don't know whether it was a thing at the premiere
I think they've been quite widely promoted, those popcorn buckets. But and the worms are a big part of this movie, I will say.
Because isn't
well.
The popcorn bucket? It's just like without seeing the film, it's just the worms' teeth, isn't it? Or his mouth, and you put your hand in there, and it's like popcorn.
They're kind of like whales. You know how whales have like a bristle?
Yeah, the bristle teeth.
It's just to sieve out. I guess the idea is that they're sieving out the sand.
Yeah.
Or keeping the sand out of their mouths.
The baleen.
Right. Is that what whales have?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, like I don't know what worms have, but very similar. So that's the idea. It's like their kind of filter system, I think. But I don't think it can work that well because there's not that many bristles. I don't know what they're trying to filter out because they seem quite happy with whatever they can get their mouths on.
Yeah.
Shall we say? Apart from that, this is not something I've wanted to see, but I think it's not something I have seen, but I think it's relevant because of Rise of the Ronin. Everyone I know is talking about Shogun.
Yeah, I keep hearing about this.
And I saw a trailer.
I thought you were going to say Kung Fu Panda 4.
Oh my God. Everyone I know is talking about Kung Fu Panda 4.
Very excited for it.
There was a Kung Fu Panda 4.
Me neither. I didn't know that there was 3 or 2.
I didn't know because it's coming out on my birthday. So that's why I'm like, so whenever there's something that happens on my birthday, I'm always just like, that thing's happening on my birthday. So that's why I'm just like, I remember that film's coming out.
No, this is Shogun. It's on Disney. And it's, I think it's kind of set around the same time of Rise of the Ronin, which I think is why it's kind of appropriate. And everybody's talking about how good it is. It's based on a book. I remember it's like a book that like was really popular in the 70s. I think it's sort of like a tome. It's the kind of thing I imagine that my dad really loved, and I will ask him when I see him next because I bet he did. But I'm really excited about it, and to have that double dip of that period of Japanese history that I'm interested in, I think is very, very exciting. So my plan is to watch that alongside playing some Rise of the Ronin.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
That does sound bliss.
Have you watched Return of the King yet, Rosie?
No, so I've got a week off coming up, and so does my friend who was also... So my friend booked this week off for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, but we have both said, we've both got this week off together. This is like prime time to watch it, so I'll be able to give you an update hopefully
soon.
So
many hours of Rebirth that will be lost Return of the King, though.
I know.
Yeah,
four.
That's a lot. That is a lot.
Yeah. That is a lot.
Well, I'm very anxious to hear Rosie's recap because I enjoyed I enjoyed the last one so much.
Yeah.
I want to tell me when it's ready, because I want to devote an entire section of the podcast.
Oh, well, I'll
to Rosie's Return of the King recap.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll the adventures of Frodo and Pippin and Saruman.
Saruman, yeah. And, yeah, it can have its own little jingle, I think.
Yeah.
Definitely. That would be great.
That would be great.
We should do this with everything that Rosie watches, I think. Every bit of media that you watch, I'd like Rosie's recap.
I mean, I do love doing just recapping some fun. I'm having fun times with films.
Lord of the Rings, especially, though. It's a magical, I thought.
A magical experience.
It was magical, yeah.
Well, there we go.
We did it. We're real life flesh people.
We're about to go. That was Biborbibo. And we are about to go now. So, yes, some wonderful games out there to play. We've got Dragon's Dogma 2. We've got Rise of the Ronin. We've got Final Fantasy VII Rebirth still, if you haven't finished that. It's a massive game.
What a start to the year.
Hell like a Dragon 2. Infinite Wealth, if you haven't done that already.
Helldivers 2. I'm still playing loads.
Helldivers 2. Just that little game that everyone's playing. It's massive. So please do play those games. Let us know what you think of them. Keep sending in your comments using the hashtag
Pod Squad.
And we will see you again in another 2 weeks' time for another episode of the PlayStation Access podcast. Until then, behave yourselves, and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.